Good morning. This is Not a Brass Tax, the Monday edition of the program. We're going until 2 o'clock. My sincere apologies for the late start of today's edition of the program. As usual, you can participate in this program by calling us at 434-1790, and we welcome your contributions via WhatsApp as well. Well, one of the significant developments that took place occurred last evening in St. George North, the constituency of St. George North, which has been held by MP Glenn Clark for quite some time. You've had the announcement of his retirement from that particular role as an MP and plans to have a by-election within 90 days from October 1st. In addition to that, we heard the Prime Minister speak about some of the initiatives which are being embarked upon by the government. We also had some comments coming from the country's Attorney General as well. So this is your opportunity to talk about those matters and others on this edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Welcome to the program. Yes, welcome.
There are two. Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
There are two issues I would like to look at this morning.
Yes.
The first one is an omission in the throne speech. Last year we had the highest number of murders, not so?
Yes.
Right. So there's a deafening silence on law and order, or crime and violence in the throne speech. What is your take on that?
Well, I think you are in a position to determine what you consider to be important that was missing. And given what has happened not only last year, but what has been happening this year as well, I think there certainly would be a deep interest in how the government is tackling this. Now, there was some reference made to it, passing reference, I would say, when the Prime Minister spoke about body cams and that sort of thing for the police. But what you more likely wanted was a far more in-depth comment on it within the throne speech. Mind you, there's been a lot of criticism of the fact that the throne speech was already pretty long. Perhaps that has a lot more to do with the inclusion of things that you may consider to be less important and less relevant. But I can't fault you in saying that a focus on crime and violence going forward. Bear this in mind. The Prime Minister said that this was all about taking fresh guard. So you can't just take fresh guard on the economy. Yeah, you also have to take fresh guard on that particular issue, though it can be said that it was implied that in some areas the government was recognizing that certain initiatives are needed to address crime and violence that go beyond policing. Certainly when they spoke about the approach to dealing with ganja and all of that, that has to be seen as tied in with the whole concept of trying to get people off the streets and that sort of thing. What do you think?
I don't think that anything was done about crime and violence. The legalizing of, the decriminalizing of the half ounce of marijuana, I don't think that have gone far enough.
It might not have gone far enough in your judgment, but obviously you're suggesting that it has gone in some direction towards addressing the issue. Not far enough, but there's movement. That's what you seem to be saying.
But that is also a far with difficulties. Now, how
is there anything that you is there
to determine if a person has less than half ounce of marijuana?
Well, I assume that first and foremost, it is weighed.
So he's going to be walking around with a scale?
No. He may see a certain amount. Initially, or some people are pretty good being able to assess those things on the basis of experience. And even if you, well, I don't understand why you're laughing. If you were a policeman for years, if you were a policeman for years, and you have had,
I used to be a person smoking a spliff. How can you?
So, if in your judgment, okay. So, if in your judgment, you don't know, what next would you do? Wouldn't you take them to a place where it would be weird? You make that sound. If you are a policeman,
yeah,
you've seen somebody smoking weed, and you are unsure about whether it qualifies for the particular weight. What's your next step?
Relieve the police of these mundane duties, where they could concentrate on more exceptional things. Mm. Why would the police be taking a person to a police station to weigh a small amount of herb, marijuana?
Well, the question is whether the policeman believes it is necessary or not. I would assume that a policeman or policewoman would exercise some discretion in determining the circumstances that would merit having it weighed. Now, they would certainly have to make a decision as to whether it makes sense to go in that direction or just let the person go along. But there's nothing that appears to me to suggest that it is mandatory that the policeman or the policewoman would have to move and weigh. That's an option that the person would exercise in the circumstances, I would think.
All right, I would like to look at the stepping down of Glenn Clark.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know that he was not scheduled to contest the next general election.
He was not scheduled? Who schedules?
He was one of the persons earmarked not to
by whom?
Contest the next general election.
Earmarked by whom?
That is the word on the ground.
What word on the ground?
Keep your ears close to the ground.
I hear a lot of things on the ground, but a lot of it is not necessarily true. I heard about this before, and this has turned out to be true. I've also heard about who is likely to run in the seat for the BLP as well, but I can't go and say exactly what I've heard on the ground, because although one piece might be right, the next piece might be wrong.
What about Finn? He was supposed to run the next general election.
But you're the person speaking. You seem to have a high degree of knowledge about what happened.
Yeah, these persons are not supposed. It was Glenn Clark, Payne, Cynthia Ford, and they say even Topping.
Who in the Labour Party told you that?
It's not in the Labour Party. That is the word on the ground.
Well, you can't just go on the basis of the word on the ground. You got to come with something better than that.
All right, I haven't been to it's stepping down now, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I see it's being used as the barometer to test the popularity of the government. And this would determine the date for the next general election.
I think that is really stretching it, though. How you arrive at that?
Well, it depends on how the people react in this election, this by election.
You really.
If the government loses support, well, they might not think.
Well, first of all, as far as I'm concerned, there are two sides to this. There is the fact that the Barbados Labour Party will go into this by election with the kind of popularity that the Prime Minister carries, with all that she articulated yesterday, last evening, as her successes. But in all of this, she has 29 seats in Parliament. The Labour Party is going to be up against the perception that it already has too many seats in Parliament. Some people will feel that way. In addition, though, a lot depends upon who is opposing the Labour Party, how organized. Right now, I think most of us recognize that none of the opposition parties come across as though they have got the capacity to fight this government effectively in an election campaign. That's my perception at the moment. As we move towards this campaign, we will get an opportunity to see if the very fact that we have a by-election will cause the Democratic Labour Party to become a more cohesive force coming out of the last elections, or whether the PDP, led by Bishop Joseph Atherley, can come across as though it has the capacity to mount an effective campaign. But I think while the Labour Party goes in with their strength, the Labour Party also has a negative, a major negative running against it, and that is the size of its majority already. Okay.
Don't you see this is also an attempt to bury the Arthur's factor in the BLP?
To bury the Arthur factor?
Yeah. Faction, yeah.
The Arthur faction. So who is it, who, in your judgment, constituted the Arthur faction?
Well, after the last general election, then Bishop Atherley crossed. They were looking for Glenn Clark to cross to him.
They who? You mean the Dems?
The people.
Which people? You mean some?
It was rumored, it was being speculated on in the press and so on whether Clark was going to
You follow a lot of rumor, though.
I don't know if it was rumor or not.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, in my job, I got to be very careful with rumor. I would prefer to go with something that is of substance, that I can actually quote somebody as having said it.
Why wasn't he given a ministerial appointment?
I don't dispense ministerial appointments.
In previous administration.
So on the basis of not getting a ministerial appointment, you think that he was part of the Arthur faction?
Well, he didn't get one, and he didn't get one.
So these were the two members of the Arthur faction?
That is what...
So George Payne got a ministry.
George
Payne had a ministry. And he helped bring down Ms. Motley as a former opposition leader. He got a ministry.
He showed opposition to the prime minister.
Precisely.
That is why he probably should got rid of him now in the reshuffle.
No, but your point is, if we follow your reasoning, he should never have been appointed a minister. That's your point.
I never said that Payne was part of the office.
Yeah, but I am saying to you that on the basis of what happened,
I have identified two persons.
But you're being convenient. Because I'm saying to you that on the basis of the past, there are people who could have also come to that conclusion. Okay? Anyhow, we got to move on. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Down to brass tacks.
Yeah, Mr. Ellis, how are you doing?
I'm okay.
Well, there's a guy from up St. Peter's side, but I live in Manor, so the nearest St. Peter.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to be honest with you, Mr. Ellis.
Not
I would like
honest?
The Member of Parliament for St. Peter, Mr. Colin Jordan, to pay a little visit to this district. And down here is like a wilderness. And I can tell you what's happening down here. No, when George Payne was the minister, for the last 2 years, the guys would come down here to cut this lawn. But because of the situation with the hut that the workers used to stay in, the water was turned off. Then they take out the toilet facilities out of the hut and give it to one of the tenants down here. So whenever these guys come down here to cut this lawn, they just sit in the hut for about six hours. Then the foreman or whoever he is call back, and then they actually leave. I really, Mr. Ellis would like to see the pay sheet of the National Housing Corporation on a weekly basis. And the reason why I'm saying that, I'm going to be very serious. They're not repairing the houses. You can't get anything due. They tell you if you repair anything on the house, keep the bill and they will give you back. But that weekly staff that is working at the National Housing Corporation should be sent on leave. Miss Ellis, they're doing absolutely nothing. And in a time like this kind of crisis, man, the government can't afford to pay out that kind of money. Nothing is being done. I see a gentleman from the NHC down here for the last 2 years. And Mr. Ennis, that is a fact. So I want to know if I would like Mr. Jordan to come here later this evening and let him see the condition of this hut down here. I mean, he is not at fault. That's between Mr. Duguid, who is the present minister now, and Mr. George Payne. And I would also like the nation to come around and take a few pictures of this area down here. It is in a mess.
But anybody could take the pictures. You don't have to wait for a newspaper to do that. Anybody can take the pictures and make them available, send them to us, send them to any media house. You don't have to wait for a photographer from the newspaper.
Okay.
It's a different era. All right.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Down to brass tacks. Hello.
Hello. Good morning.
Morning.
Any person in your job, in your position, should always pay attention to the rumor. It is that every rumor that is going to be true, but you should never ignore that. What do you have to say about that?
I hear rumors, but in my position, I have to be careful how I respond to them. It isn't that I don't hear, and I don't remember saying that I didn't hear rumors. I said to you that I heard about this development in St. George, and I also said to you that I have also heard who is likely to run. So what are you talking about? Them. So what are you talking about?
Hello?
So what are you saying?
Any rumor should be investigated.
Should be what? What's that?
Should be investigated.
Okay.
Then. Any rumor.
All right, then.
No.
It got you.
I heard Greg talking about his contribution to his position.
Your telephone connection is not good. It's breaking up.
Hello?
Your telephone connection is not good.
Yeah, because I can hear myself.
Talking. No, I don't think that we should inflict this on the public. It's hard for us to follow you because you're breaking up a bit. Okay? Thank you very much. Should perhaps try again. Down to brass tacks.
Good morning.
Good morning.
The facilities at the QEH have been stretched for years, for decades. We've always had issues. Okay, he's saying 1 in 5 people have problems with type 2, which incidentally there is a cure for. Because a guy came to Barbados 8 years ago, sponsored by the central bank, not a guy, a woman, and a doctor, and explained that there is a cure for type 2. So I don't know how it is that people still got type 2 boat here. But the point is, 1 in 5 people in Barbados suffer from type 2, which puts a strain on the facilities that are available through the public health system. Has been so for years. The same is also true for, you know, hypertension. 6 in 10 people suffer from high blood pressure issues. The government of Barbados, in all the years I have been alive, has never, through public policy, done anything to relieve that particular situation. But here it is, that we got a sickness that kills 0.01% of the population outright. The 0.6% that died as a result of having this particular sickness die as a result of a pre-existing condition. Now, we got 6 in 10 people with pre-existing conditions that the government of Barbados has never, ever seen a reason to take drastic or even any kind of response to alleviating. Because, you know, after all, it's only, you know, people live, people die of cancer every... I mean, come on. Well, about 400 people die of cancer every year. Nobody gives a tale about that. The government barbers never gave a tale about that. But you shut up economy down for 6 months. You shut everything down for 3 weeks.
Why do you always sound as though you have to be quarreling with the world?
No, no,
can you just cool down a bit?
No, because because every time I talk to you, you will find a reason.
I want to listen to you. No, I just want to listen to you. Many times you realize that I really don't want to get involved in any confrontation with you. So sometimes I let you talk and I done with that.
I don't win, I don't lose.
But I just want you to realize that other people listening to you, and they don't need to be so confrontational or to sound so confrontational.
Well, okay, but there you go.
Go ahead.
Because as I say, when I see, I got to live in a world where a lot of nonsense happens. And sometimes the only way to deal with this nonsense is to get it off your chest. Because you can't go to a psychiatrist.
But I'm not your psychiatrist. Huh?
No, but when you're venting, you're venting. You can't be venting and talking normal. Because Barbados has been shut down for 6 months over foolishness. No, they got the COVID. St. James has been declared COVID-free since March. Barbados has been COVID-free since March. I mean, COVID didn't start in Barbados. It's not naturally occurring in this party world. They ain't going to wake up one morning and say, we never had COVID before. All of a sudden, we got COVID here in Barbados. COVID is imported. It's brought in. It either started in Italy or in China. Not in Barbados. So we have done everything possible to please the WHO. Wear a mask. Put alcohol on your hand before you go through doors. Get your temperature. I get tested 3 times a day. My temperature. So obviously, you got a way of finding out whether or not you got it. So we have done all these things. I think it's about time that the government, on behalf of the people of Barbados, wake up, get some balls, and tell the WHO enough is enough.
And how are we going to do that?
It's no longer relevant.
May I ask you a question?
All we will do is control the inflows. Send the people to school. Send them to school. Send them back to university. Life should return to normal. We are not going to get the tourists like before. We're going to have problems getting... But there's no, I'm getting foreign exchange, but there's no reason why the domestic economy should suffer anymore.
Okay, thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Hi, good morning.
Yes, morning.
I want Bob, oh, there it is, an echo, but I don't know what's causing that. I want Barbadians to recognize that they should not be distracted by this announcement of a by-election in St. George North. I noticed that Carol Martindale, the Nation newspaper yesterday, stated that it was a bombshell. To me, as you pointed out, this was an open secret. Everybody knew about this. So I am looking to see that they're trying to avoid having public discussion on the same-sex civil union matter. And this is what I want to say. You know, I thought about it over the weekend, and I thought, you know, in the history of electoral politics in post-independence Barbados, there were 3 occasions when Barbadian voters gave a political party an overwhelming victory, such as to constitute more than the 2/3 majority required to change the constitution, etc. 1986, the DLP won 24-3 under Mr. Barrow. 1999, the Barbados Labour Party under Mr. Owen Arthur. But I was thinking that in neither of the, and then 2018, of course, with Miss Motley getting all the seats. In neither of these previous elections, under 1986, Mr. Barrow, 1999, under Mr. Owen Arthur, none of these prime ministers sought to run roughshod over the interests, the concerns, people's views on certain key matters. They didn't seek to push through legislation that they know were unpopular. And they sought to govern the country in the interests of Barbadians as a whole. I want to know what percentage of Barbadians are homosexual. David, did you say something just now?
No, I don't know.
Oh, I thought my voice is, this thing is echoing. I don't know why.
But it is not too bad. I could still hear you clearly, and I believe the public is in a similar situation.
Okay. Less than probably 1%. Let's even give them 2%. 1% would bring them about 2,800, close to 3,000. Let's even give them 2%, 6,000 persons. You are seeking to change laws without coming to us, the public. And in doing so, you have decided, I am going to use my majority. And of course, now you're going to have a by-election. So you're hoping people don't come out and discuss this in any sustained way, but they start to talk about politics because, you know...
I don't understand your reasoning on that, though. I do not understand your reasoning on that as it relates to public debate. Because if you are having a by-election campaign, it stands to reason that this could well be one of the issues that opposition parties will pounce upon. In my judgment, this is one of the better opportunities for those who oppose the government's approach on this matter to actually say so.
I agree with you 100%.
So, in other words, I am at variance with you on your assertion that they are seeking to avoid having public discussion on the same-sex issue.
They're seeking to distract us. And what I'm saying is you will see it in the call-in program. You will hear persons starting to run off with whatever they throw out there. And you have to have the key actors keeping this discussion in the forefront. But I haven't heard Ms. Verla de Pisa in her statement mention that. I heard Bishop Atherley, but Ms. Verla de Pisa talk about warm over soup and all that. She hasn't addressed it. Maybe the Seventh-day Church, I think she's part of that. I don't know how they feel. I don't know. But I'm saying to you, I understand the churches have met, and I'm not going to go into that, but whatever, you'll probably hear something from them. They wanted to be united and what they say. But I want to remind persons, and then I'll just list a couple things and I'll be gone. I want to remind persons, you remember last year, I think it is last year, when there was a Canadian parent of a boy who wanted to represent himself as a girl in a private school here in Barbados and sought to bring, sort of challenge legally our government. I don't know if they went as far as the courts, but they were certainly challenging the school that the boy should dress up, this Canadian young boy should dress up because he thinks he's a girl. And then he should be given bathroom right as a girl, etc. I want Bajans to understand what the same-sex thing is. Don't move from it, people. Understand that our whole society is going to be changed. And these are some of the things, some of the laws that LGBT would include. There's another thing before I list a few of the laws, David. You know, I have never heard one journalist ask Ms. Motley a very important question. Now, Ms. Motley on the throne speech said that she, the Governor General, Dame Sandra Mason, said, Barbados, we wish to be considered among the progressive nations of the world. Barbados cannot afford to lose its international place and reputation, nor can a society as tolerant as ours allow itself to be blacklisted for human and civil right abuse of discrimination on how we treat a human sexuality and relations. Now, it seems to me Ms. Motley's concerned about how she's viewed as a leader by certain international community and certain persons and not Barbados, how we are viewed. She talked about funding, etc., but Peter Wickham was right to point out we have never been blacklisted or been badgered about same-sex marriage. We have been badgered about removing this penalty for buggery. So that point she was making is misleading and false. But I want Barbadians to understand, journalists, first of all, should ask Ms. Motley, Ms. Motley, are you supportive of same-sex lifestyle? Are you part of the LGBT community? And Ms. Motley should confront this, because if you're going to pass laws...
Okay, you've come here well-prepared to discuss this subject today, and you've spent a fair amount of time on it. And you are entitled to pick the issues that you consider to be important. I began by saying to you that I didn't agree that this is something that the government is basically trying to run away from by having a by-election. This is an opportunity for Barbadians who are not supportive of the government's policy to use this chance to articulate to government what their concerns are. And if we have enough people out there who are worried about this, then I expect that they are in a position to let their voices be heard on it. In the context of all that has been said in the throne speech, my own personal view is that the most important issues are those that revolve around the economic well-being of Barbados coming out of the COVID situation.
Important to whom?
To all of us who work
really?
And live and work here.
Really?
Because if you have 40% unemployment, then that is a worry. That a big worry. And if,
so what
if,
has the throne speech done
well, let
to
me,
correct that?
Well, you know, you had a long run, you know.
I'm asking a
you
question.
Have had
I'm
a
not
long
over,
run.
I'm asking a question.
You have had a long run. So let me get the opportunity to just say to you that it is recognized that part of the challenge associated with trying to get tourists back into this country and trying to reduce the unemployment in as quick a period of time is this same issue here of how are you going to deal with people who come to work here who are in same-sex relationships. I feel that to a large extent the matter has been somewhat confused by the way it has been addressed so far, because it seems as though on the one hand you have those who are accusing the government of introducing same-sex relationships and recognition of them basically through the back door, and same-sex marriage is something that they're seeing as effectively being introduced in the country. And then there are others who are saying that the government isn't going far enough and that the government must use its majority to just impose their will on the rest of the people of Barbados.
But that's what they're already doing.
So you have those two sides of it. But I think the discussion must be rooted in the deeper concern about what COVID has done to the Barbados economy and whether we find it acceptable that because of COVID, the government can run away from what appears to be a commitment to have some referendum on this general issue and introduce elements of it to the country under the rubric of saying we have to do this to help jumpstart the economy. That's the language that they're using is about discrimination. But truth be told, if the government is committed to ending discrimination, it can begin and end with homosexuality.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know how many people in this country are handicapped or whatever you want to call it, because you know these people
and people
face discrimination every day in other ways. People facing discrimination on the basis of age in this country every day. All right, so if you're coming to me on the discrimination point, you can't behave as though you are more bothered about it as it relates to homosexuality and less concerned about it in the other areas in which people are facing it every day.
Can I say this to you, David? We can walk and chew gum at the same time. So this thing about being concerned about the economic side and all that, I kept repeating, Barbados is more than an economy, it is a society. If on the one hand you're looking, look at all the other countries who are affected with COVID problems, Trinidad, all of that. Nobody rushing to have same-sex relation push to increase tourism, etc. But I am saying to you,
glad you mentioned
that
Trinidad.
We have to look at our society because
well, you have had you have
same-sex,
ma'am, you have had
civil unions,
you have had a lot to say already on it. I don't think that I've said
in our society.
I haven't said what I did to have you continue on this particular
vein. You seem worried.
I'm not worried. I just wanted to say.
Stopping discussion?
I ain't stopping discussion. I gave you ample time. You were basically repeating yourself.
But
I only want to ask you one question. You know, some time ago, you came here and you celebrated the fact that Trinidad's figures were so outstanding as it related to the issue of COVID. And since then, you haven't returned to what has happened in Trinidad. What are you saying now?
Well, if you don't don't want to hear me finish my point on this homosexual thing. You want to divert me to Trinidad. We will talk about Trinidad another time.
Fine,
but I'm not worried about that. Trinidad's situation is multifaceted with the Venezuelans and other things.
All
but I won't detain you anymore.
All right,
thank
you.
You're not going to divert me. I wanted to finish what I'm saying.
All right,
thank you
very much. Good. You see, one of the issues that we have to confront in this country is that the people who belong to the LGBTQ and all those other, you know, letters that go behind it are a powerful lobby worldwide, all right? But the people who are discriminated against in other areas don't lobby like them. They don't have the kind of power that they do. They don't have the influence that they do. And as a result, your problems are put far down the line, down the list. You want to talk about people who have problems about here? You see the children that have disabilities? Talk about them. You know, in all of this discussion about back to school, their plight has not been mentioned too much. Nobody talks about these things. What goes on in this country is so grossly unfair at times. I accept the principle that we need to be concerned about discrimination against people. But those of you who are touched by discrimination need to recognize that sitting down in silence isn't going to work. You have to be far more involved. Take a leaf out of the book of the other people who have been able to put their issues on the agenda to the point where they have to be heard and there is reaction to what they have to say. That's my suggestion to you. This is down to brass tacks. And the other part of that is that they're so successful at putting their case that they then get a whole set of people chasing their issue as well and helping to, you know, pull it to the fore. People who claim that they are opposed, but at the end of the day, they assist in trying to bring it up there so that everybody else can hear it, everybody else can see it, while at the same time ignoring the other issues. Stop and think about how it really works. This is down to brass tacks.
Good morning, David. Good morning, David.
Yes.
I got a feedback, though. Rough. You can rectify it?
I don't know. I can't rectify it myself. I can only ask that the technical people look at it.
Everything I say to you coming back at me.
Somebody says I didn't allow the Trinidad woman to make her point. I thought she did that. She had ample time. I mean, how much more do you want? I listened here. I thought that I listened for at least 3 minutes to have her articulate her position on this. How on earth can I be accused of not giving her a chance to put her point? This is down to brass tacks, sir.
Yeah, David.
Yes.
Now, I must comment again on your first caller. How in the name of heaven's Glenn Clark resignation to take up a new posting is a way of getting rid of the old NAFA fraction? Can you explain to me?
I really don't know.
I mean, there's mere nonsense. He comes with all the time on the program with these little frivolous, foolish things all the time. Now, I want you, David, not saying that Trinidad no woman because she don't respect nobody, so I don't refer to her as a woman as well. I want you to make sure that she give the Prime Minister's country her right title. It seems to me as though she have no respect whatsoever, and it seems to me as though she's doing it deliberately by refusing to give the Prime Minister her title. Have you observed that, David?
I haven't observed it, no.
Well, that's what she do all the time. Listen next time. I mean, I think it's most... I don't even got the word in my mouth calling me a cut me off. But I think you all need to do something with her because she is very disrespectful to the Prime Minister.
How so?
David, every time she comes, first thing, every contribution concerning Prime Minister Motley, that is the first thing. And
she
always refers to her as Motley or Miss Motley.
Miss Motley is not a problem. I don't hear the referring to her as Motley. I hear her as the Prime Minister. Prime Minister.
No, no,
Motley.
Never say Prime Minister. Never, I never ever.
Or Miss Motley. It is not disrespectful to call her Miss Motley.
But I never hear her.
You're making a. You're blowing this thing up. Is there something else you need to raise here?
Yeah, let me go on to my point. Now I recognize that there's a new comment of the old guard of the Democrat Labour Party. I know you always tell me that I'm always interested in the Democrat Labour Party affairs, but I must continue to be. I see now the debate: Ronald Jones, Dennis Slaw, James Paul, Steve Blackett, and George Pilgrim are in the run again. And I honestly believe that I would like to see more of the former old guard come to the forefront. I believe there are a lot more coming too. Because I know exactly what
is that. Is that favorable to the ruling party or is it not?
David, to be honest with you, that question got me sort of a bamboozle with that question. I don't know which one it is. But I honestly would like to see every one of them come again.
Why?
Because I know it would be a certain dirty love.
Well, so you think it's advantageous to the Barbados Labour Party. That's your view.
And David, to be honest with you, I believe if they're at the present moment, at least the five that I'm saying now, if they could mobilize the members of their former constituencies, Viola de Pisa would be in for a rough ride come Friday or Saturday.
Well, we have to wait and see. All that's speculative.
No, I believe that's not going to happen.
Well, it's speculative.
But Viola, on the other hand, she needs to go, and as I mentioned to you last week, she needs to go and do some research.
You always have me, though, as to why you spend so much time looking at what the Democratic Labour Party does politically.
I mentioned that to you from my beginning.
I'm always amazed.
I mentioned that to you. Now, Viola came on the joint speech when the press interviewed her. Viola's first response to the Republic was that she's fully in support of the Republic. Just a couple of days ago, I heard Viola de Pisa say that the people of Barbados do not know the full Republic status, what's all the status that we want to say, what form it will be taking. And this is saying, well, the people from the outside come and support it, you know. But now she is questioning what form it will be taking after supporting these.
She's not questioning what form it will be taking. Essentially, to go in that direction, you can take one option or another. You know? And therefore, if the government says that in principle it is taking Barbados down that route, then it is reasonable for people to say, tell me more. What exactly do you have in mind? Which type of republic would you be opting for? That is a reasonable request. In these circumstances, you may say, in principle, I agree with Barbados becoming a republic. But I know that you could have an executive republic, a republic where you have an executive president. I suppose in the case of Guyana is one of those. Or you could have a situation where, like Trinidad, a different kind of system. So it's basically telling us exactly what type of republic you have in mind.
But that should be her first response. Don't just go to support it and then come and backtrack.
But I thought that's what is implied by what she said.
No, I said to you that should be her first response rather than support it offhand. Now, I'm close by asking you a question. David, I discover journalism in Barbados is at an all-time low. And I formed that impression simply by seeing the Daily Nation on a daily basis. I purchase one every possible day. And yesterday, headlines in the Daily Nation gave the people of this country the impression as though some bombshell was going to be dropped by Glenn Clark. And I began to question journalism and Barbara Davila. I think the Nation newspaper missed people like Albert Bamford and Harold Hoyt. When there was a wrong beginning to get the sort of nonsensical reporting at all, we used to get, I mean, journalism used to be at its highest. And I find here all yet the Nation is dropping to very, very low standard as far as reporting is concerned. I thank you, David.
Down to brass tacks.
Good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Hi.
This is not what they call it, right? But I just want to say something quickly before I get to my point.
Your telephone line isn't sounding good either.